just so unsettled, mate, and it's just confusing, truth be told. We've always scratched our heads from game one with Laurie Daly's selections, and game three is exactly the same for mine.
Yeah, well, we talked about how they just got dominated in the middle and in the ruck, and what have they changed? They've changed the back line. Are the Dolphins now the number one team in Queensland? The Cows, after their performance on Saturday night, might have something to say about that, but they are certainly mounting a strong case given not just how they're performing and how they're building this season, but the depth that they've got across their roster. Well, today, Steve, we're going to talk Origin. For mine, there is no way in hell that the Blues are winning up at Suncorp. What else are we talking today?
Mate, we talk about the Dolphins and their rise over the last couple of years and this logjam in the NRL ladder between second and eighth spot.
Yeah, are the Dolphins the number one team in Queensland? We'll dive into that as well. Let's start with the Queensland team. One big out for mine, Lindsay Collins. He's just he's one of those atypical Queensland players that just rises to the occasion seemingly every time. They've got a pretty handy replacement, no doubt, but they'll definitely miss him because he's just one of those players that always has a cracker for the Maroons.
Yeah, Lindsay Collins is big for them, mate. You see him do the one percenters, as they say, or the things off the ball. You know, he's always kick chase. You know, he always gets up and gives the fullback a lot of things to worry about and contest the bombs. So he gets through his workload, mate, and he's just one of those typical Queensland forwards. So he'll be big. Obviously, Carrigan's the big addition for them to try and play in the middle. He's coming back from that injury and hasn't played any game time. So it'll be interesting to see how he, you know, how he gets through and what the expected minutes will be for him. But certainly, you know, if you're going to lose someone as big as what Lindsay Collins has been, then Pat Carrigan's a fairly decent backup, mate.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And they're not obviously going to lose much there, if anything. The other big end for them is Jeremiah Anai. That try he scored on Saturday night, taking the bomb, that was ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty special. Even that game, it meant so much to the Cowboys, being Lolo's 300s. The first tackle of the game, Nanai just absolutely went berserk and just jammed in off the kickoff. He was just on. So, look, a little bit hard done by, I would have thought, Fini Filiaki and even Hill and Lukey was their 20th man. I thought both of them were a little bit hard done by. They haven't really been given the opportunity to show their wares. But Slater's got that uncanny knack of just timing with his selections, and Jeremiah Nanai has put a good couple of games together these last couple of weeks. And similar to Carrigan, you know, he won't be expecting him or needing him to play big minutes, but he just thinks that he could just put something nice together for him.
Yeah, I just think a player like that who's got a bit of X factor and can produce those magic moments, it's a no-brainer. You've got to get him in there. Now, given what we've seen so far in the series, I can't for the life of me see how the Maroons get beaten. I can't remember the last time I went into an Origin game just thinking, probably somewhere in the middle of the eight in a row, where I just remember thinking, where I can think, you know, we're no hope.
Yeah. Well, you look at the, you know, we're talking about the changes they've made. They look really settled. I mean, you can hardly say Carrigan coming in's, he's not going to be prepared for it. He's a seasoned campaigner and knows what it takes to win in Origin level. And they just look so much settled and such a better team. And then you look at New South Wales, there's been disruption through the selection on all three games. And then again, for game three, we've got six changes. And then that, on top of that, there's a few that have changed in and out of the 17 as well. So it's just so unsettled, mate, and it's just confusing, truth be told. We've always scratched our heads from game one with Laurie Daly's selections, and game three is exactly the same for mine.
Yeah, well, we talked about how they just got dominated in the middle and in the ruck, and what have they changed? They've changed the back line.
Yeah.
Like, yep. What the fuck?
Yeah. Look, you look back, there's a few of the selections. Obviously, Liam Martin, you would have assumed Liam Martin would have been there from the get-go if he hadn't been fit. So we can sort of understand that. Again, you talk about being unlucky. I really feel for Dylan Lucas. We spoke about it last week. To have his maiden Origin game on the wrong side of the field
against a Maroons that we really didn't have answers for. I hope that's not the last time we see Dylan Lucas in the Blues colours. But look, Liam Martin's certainly a positive. But to your point, the Ben 201, you know, he gave the reason of bringing Bradman Best in. Brian 2-0, sorry.
Yeah.
He gave the reason to bring Bradman Best into the side was because, you know, it's game three, it's up in Suncorp, where he needs the experience, he knows what he's going to get out of Bradman Best. And then in the same breath, he's dropped 2-0 for Jack Bostock, so who's an out-and-out great footballer, hasn't been playing on the wing for his club side this season, and he's never played Origin before. So there's just... It's almost comical, some of the things that have come out. Unfortunately for the Blues, it's just not good, mate.
No, it's not. I actually like the Bradman Best selection. That's someone that we've talked about in the past, that every time he's played Origin, he's actually stepped up. He had a great debut. He's sort of come in at different times when Latrell hasn't been fit, and when he has been fit, because he's been a bit injured as well around rep time, and he's gone well. So I think that's a good selection. Yeah, the winger, we did mention it last week, or maybe after game two, about Toto and perhaps that being a risk. Yes, he makes 150 to 200 metres repeatedly, but he's been exposed in the air, not just last game, but at times last year as well. And probably a bit stiff, but when you look at the replacement comes in, who is a big body, he's tall, he's going to be good aerially, but he hardly fills you with a great deal of confidence given it's his first game.
Yeah, it'll be a big occasion. There's no doubt that Billy Slater will be targeting, of course. Obviously, Cobbo will continue to go up against Marky Mark, and they had an absolute outstanding battle in game two. Jojo Fifita hasn't been tremendous. He was certainly better in game two than he was in game one. But there's no doubt that they're going to go to Bostock's to wing and test him early in defence. There's no question. It does give us more height, as you said. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But it's just an interesting one. I'm not saying I like it or I don't like it. It just contradicts, again, that mixed messages that we're hearing from Daly. And if the public and the media is hearing it, then surely they're hearing it in camp as well. And just that mixed messages confuse me. Even Ola Kawatu, you know, for game one, he deserved to be there. For game two, he wasn't good enough. Now for game three, he's good enough again, but only on the bench. It just hasn't been any consistency. And while I certainly agree Ola Kawatu has to be in the side, I'm more talking from a selection point of view of just the absolute mixed messages and uncertainty that surely leads to a little bit of lack of confidence from the players.
Yeah, and there was that whisper coming out around game two about him not inspiring the team, and we talked about it over the series how, yeah, there's no certainty, there's no clarity. We want to have that, and yeah, mixed messages, absolutely. What do we think about the... who they've picked in the middle? We talked about how well we thought Victor Radley went in game one. He certainly wasn't horrible in game two, but they've gone for size. They've retained Fenua Blake, who played 10 minutes. Just, yeah, again, confusing. Are they banking on the fact that the trend's going to continue, that the play-the-ball speeds seem to have slowed down and we're getting these tighter games, and they're finally going to realise that we have to play Origin football and we've got to line them longer and we've got to really slow down the ruck and we've got to give away a few sets here and there once the ref puts away the whistle, which is what happened in game two, we've got to be playing Origin football, not park football, club football.
Yeah, I think the Radley selection or the misselection in jersey 20 comes from Ola Kawatu. I think he's bowed to the pressure of the media and the public, put Ola Kawatu back in, and then he's had to edge his bets. And I think what he's done is he's dropped Radley back to 20, thinking that Ethan Strange is going to play in the middle. So unless we obviously get an injury in the halves, then Ethan Strange is surplus. He can play in the middle if need be. But to me, again, I just think that's wishy-washy. Radley did come on and give two penalties away in game two. So whether that's been used as an excuse or not, but when I look across that team, They were all hard workers, right? Now, Liam Martin's going to finally bring a little bit of mongrel, but Radley's it, right? No one can accuse any of those forwards for not being really strong, hard workers. They get through their meterage, they get through their tackles, but none of them have got that mongrel in them. You know, Barnett and Haas, obviously, you know, Young and Murray are similar. Obviously, Yeo. So all talented footballers, hard working. But there's no mongrel. So to lose Victor Radley, I just thought it was an error. I'm happy for the occasional penalty here or there just to have him on the field. When New South Wales needed someone to lift, that was when Radley went out and, again, got it wrong a couple of times with his penalties, but at least he was showing a little bit of intent. And I think that could be the missing factor for Daly, with edging his bets around Strange being able to play in the middle if need be. I don't like the look of it, mate, again, unfortunately.
No, balance all wrong. People have been saying it all series, probably for a couple of years now. Cam Murray's got to start. On Thursday night, again, seeing him live, just the speed of his movement and his pass to get Cody Walker outside our edge defenders, like it just Walker just had a field day. Now, that doesn't always happen when Isaiah Yeo's on the field. And we need to give those guys time, and we need to give them space, and we need to utilise the speed and power we've got out wide. And while we're talking about that game, as you've said the last couple of weeks, I have been pretty big on Moses not being at his best, and it still surprises me that people keep talking about, you know, apart from, you know, here and there, he's had a good year. The only person I've heard that's agreeing with me is Paul Crawley. He's like, he hasn't been at his best all year. And Thursday night was the worst game I can ever remember him playing. He was horrible. He defended badly. He made that many mistakes with the ball. And he just looked disinterested at times. And, okay, to be fair, he was on baby watch apparently, and I'm pretty sure it was him. His wife was expecting at any time, which may have preoccupied his thoughts. But if you're going to be there, you're going to be there.
Yeah, spot on, mate. I worry that we're going to come out of game three with another Queensland win, and everyone's going to have a go at Cleary again for not dominating Origin. And I just look across this team, and I don't think Daly's given him the opportunity to dominate. I think, you know, we heard it last week from Will around the statistics when Moses and Cleary play with each other, how many times Cleary touches the ball. Mm-hmm. That basically says that he can't be dominant at Origin level because Moses is splitting the role with him. So I just don't look at this side and think we've got, you know, Cleary to be able to dominate throughout the 80 minutes. And then to your point with Murray not starting, you know, that first interchange more than likely will be Barnett off Yeo up to front row and Cam Murray in at lock. Well, then that again starts to think, okay, then why have we got Fenua Blake on the bench?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because then all we're doing then, obviously, Haas can't afford to be off the field for very long at all. You know, Yo's going to play big minutes, so is Barnett. So why do we need that third big body on the bench? Are we going to play him for another 10 minutes? Mm-hmm. Are we banking on one of the two front rowers copping a head knock in the first 10 minutes? Like, it just, to me, again, just seems so out of whack, mate.
I don't know why he didn't start Fenua Blake. He's a great lateral defender. For a big body, he can move. And why they wouldn't just start those two guys up there and just get as many minutes out of Haas and Fenua Blake as possible. Then you bring Cam Murray on. Then you bring some speed. But again, I'd be starting with Cam Murray because maybe the game's done after 23 minutes.
Yeah, spot on, mate. The other one, obviously, will be Brake Bailey. There is no doubt that they will not allow Robson to play 80 minutes again. He got that woefully wrong in game two, leaving Appy on the pine. So there's another interchange that you take into effect. But I'm with you, mate. I would have played, knowing that he's got a bit of Origin underneath him now, I would have started with Fenua Blake. And done the same thing with Robson. Fenua Blake and Robson, you go until you drop. Go 1,000 miles an hour and do as much as you possibly can. And then when they need to get done, that's it. One change for Brake Brayley, and Robson doesn't come back on. And one change for Fenua Blake and he doesn't come back on. And I think that would have given them a little bit more consistency around what they're doing with their interchanges and a little bit better plan. So, I'm just confused. The more I look at it, the more I think about it.
And I'd like to hear what his thoughts on why we got completely dominated in the ruck in the second half and why he thinks picking the same team is going to fix that. Because it doesn't matter if, like, there have been games where the odd game where Queensland hasn't shown up, their forwards have got dominated. Cam Munster and Harry Grant haven't been able to arrest that slide and we've put on a big score. It doesn't matter who you got playing halfback if you can't win that ruck. And I don't have any belief that we can. I would be just so surprised if we're even competitive.
Yeah, I agree, mate. Well, to your point, you hit the nail on the head with the first comment you made. The changes he's made, we lost that middle. The changes he made are two centres, a winger, and the reserve hooker. Like, they're four of the six changes is what he's made. And then, obviously, bringing Martin in will certainly help that edge. He'll go into battle, and Munster will have a little bit more of a look with his running game than he has in the first two games. But he certainly hasn't changed anything up in the middle. And if he doesn't come up with a better strategy with his rotation off the pine, look, at the end of the day, Harry Grant will just cut us to pieces again. I think, like the Melbourne Storm season, I know I've banged on about it probably too much, but Harry Grant's been hasn't copped the pats on the back he's deserved for the first two games. Well, rightfully so, Walker's been the man of the matches and their best player, but Harry Grant for mine has been absolutely everything to Melbourne. To Queensland, to the stage where I think if we actually had a switch talkers, it would have been a very, very different outcome. I think he's been simply phenomenal. And to your point, I don't think they've made the changes, certainly not with personnel. It'll be interesting to see what they do with marker play especially and their A defenders to see if they can do something to stop Harry Grant at a dummy half.
Yeah, absolutely. Because they haven't been able to do it so far.
No.
If we just come back to it, like, you know, what we talked about before with Daly, you know, he's copped a fair bit, and I think rightfully so. I think if you step into that role, you've got to cop it. And, you know, the players, of course, come out and defend him, and you just need to have someone in that role that knows how to play the game. And I feel like we're a bit of a broken record because we have talked about this the whole way through. But, they've got to get this selection for the coach next year right, because otherwise this could drift on for years. The way the Bronx are heading, maybe Major's available again.
don't be surprised.
I saw a little snippet from the Sunday Sin Bin where Brent Reed was suggesting that if they re-sign him beyond 27, there'll be a mass exodus of players. So the thought there is that the players are off him big time, which is very interesting.
Yeah, it's a big one, mate. Obviously, we've heard that out of the last few clubs that Madge has been to. It's a balancing act of, do you let the inmates run the asylum, or do the officials control what's going on in the club? So, look, truth be told, I think they need a few of the older fellas to start heading out. Obviously, Haas and Reynolds are going to be big ones, but at the moment, they've got some serious roster decisions to make. Shibasaki's just been offered a $500,000 two-year deal with the Perth Bears, so he will not be with the Broncos next year. So whether it's at Perth or not, Shibasaki will be definitely gone. So they've got a fairly big turnover of roster regardless of who's coaching the side and if they re-sign Madge or not, mate.
Yeah, and we talked about that, how were they going to retain all of those impressive young juniors, including all of the big names that they had. And, the Dominoes don't seem to be falling favourably at the moment. Now, are the Dolphins now the number one team in Queensland? The Cows, after their performance on Saturday night, might have something to say about that, but they are certainly mounting a strong case given not just how they're performing and how they're building this season, but the depth that they've got across their roster. Pretty impressive.
Yeah, it is, mate. Look, at the end of the day, there's a lot more to being Queensland's number one team than just the ladder. But I think the Dolphins are certainly heading in the right direction. I think it'd be premature to say that they are right now. You know, Broncos have got that massive corporate following. They've obviously got the fan base to follow as well. But at the end of the day, what the Dolphins have achieved and what they continue to achieve is something special. You know, they, as it's well publicised, they go from under sixes all the way to the NRL.
which is the only club in the NRL to do so. And what they've done with that squad is super impressive. For them to have those Origin players being signed to them and already 4 years in, I think it is, for them to have so many Origin players and then to have a look at the lineup without those Origin players in it and say, shit, I think they're still going to win this game, is just really impressive. Christian Wolf's done an outstanding job. You know, the knock on everyone after you take over from Bennett is that you're going to struggle. Bennett doesn't really worry about tomorrow. He only worries about today. But what Christian Wolf's done has been simply outstanding. So he's certainly a coach that has got them pointing in the right direction, and he seems to be developing this young crop really impressively.
Yeah, the mark of good coach is how much players improve, and Selwyn Cobbo's the poster child for that, like how much he's improved or got back to his peak levels consistently. Like he was just toying with this in Game 2 in Origin. But then you look at guys like Max Plath and even the renaissance of Cody Nikorima, some of these older guys just playing some of their best football. It's impressive. Impressive what he's done there, and yes, you're right. There is a lot more to being the number one team in Queensland than just the table, but they are certainly trending in the right direction after some pretty impressive performances over the last 2 months and the squad that they continue to build there up at Redcliffe.
Yeah, definitely, mate. We saw a few of their young stars come through the Origin Under-19s last week, which was a very high-quality game of football. And they've got some really good. They've got a couple of feeder clubs up here in the Q Cup that they work through, and they've got a number of absolute gun schoolboys coming through. So the Dolphins certainly look on the up. If you were going to lob on one, if you had a young fella now and you were going to go with one or the other, you'd be pushing him towards the Dolphins right now. But you don't count the Broncos out because they're never down for very long, and they've just got such that big clubhouse and that big corporate support behind them, mate. So I think these two clubs are going to go at each other for many years to come, which is exactly what the NRL was hoping for when they put the Dolphins in.
Yeah, absolutely. Well said. All right, let's get to the game reviews. Like I mentioned, I was out there on the Thursday night. Actually went there with a bit of hope, given we've been defending pretty well. And I would have liked to have seen how we would have gone if we could have completed our sets. 65% completion all told. The second half, I think I read it was 43%. Something ridiculous, like completed 8 of 17 or something. And, mate, it was a tough watch. Like, that. Every time we got a bit of momentum, we'd knock it on. And the disappointing thing is, it's a young side who have improved a lot, but in the past we've not been able to defend mistakes or a couple of repeat sets, but in the start of the game we're actually doing that. We're showing a bit of steel. But no team can survive off the back of 65% completion and expect to compete. And then the back end of the game, that's of course the points are going to fly. Hey, it was a hard watch. I haven't been so disappointed. Like, you can't fault the effort, but I haven't been so disappointed in just some of the dumb football that was played. I think Riles described it as wouldn't have beaten a park football team. And, mate, after watching that, you can't disagree.
Yeah, it wasn't a quality game of footy, mate. To your point, the handling just wasn't up to scratch. You know, South in different times wasn't much better. Overall, they end up getting to about 76%, I think it says here. So they weren't too bad at the end, but still wasn't good enough through certain sections. And, yeah, Parra just didn't offer anything. You talk about Moses, he was nowhere near what he needed to be. Look, they hung in for a little while on the scoreboard, but I think, you know, looking back in hindsight now, I think that was how South played. Once South got sort of going, they were just too good for them. You know, Talis Duncan, they've moved him out to the centres, and he just keeps getting better and better with every game. He's got Origin written all over him, which means he probably won't get picked for New South Wales, but certainly a future's bright for him. And South just keep finding a way to win. You know, they're not looking tremendous. Certainly Latrell's hurt them, as we've spoken about, not being there. But at 8-6, they've won a few of those games where it could have gone either way. This was one of those games for South that they lose this, everyone would have walked away and said, yeah, fair enough, we see that. So yep. It's a big one for them and for Para. Unfortunately, the 2026 year of misery continues, mate.
Yep, and while some of the other bottom teams are signing players like that we've talked about, the Dragons, we missed out on another one. Bronson Cherry confirmed for the Storm. Let's hope that they... Well, I heard Ryle's interviewed on Saturday. He was saying that we're going to be patient. We're not going to buy players just for the sake of buying names. We're going to be patient with this and just hope the club and the supporter base are as patient, because you can see what he's trying to do, but eventually you've got to start winning games.
Yeah, the patience is a good thing. Don't get me wrong, but the reserve grade have only won four games as well. The New South Wales Cup side. So, look, Parramatta have always had a huge junior base that have always been exceptionally talented, that they've never been able to find that pathway through to first grade. So they need to work heavily on that. But if patience is going to result in their pathway program, then they need to do something, because the New South Wales Cup side's not performing much better, mate.
Yep, and to give you a bit of context around that, before this weekend gone, the number of games missed by players, Para were way out in front with 109. Bellamy referenced the Storm. They're on 90. So we're a good 20 games missed more than the Storm, and Bellamy was saying that has had an impact. But the Rabbitohs are at 89 and the Warriors are at 85, and both of those teams are tied. They're in that log jam of tied for second. So, you know, that you can still perform, and you need to have that depth, and that's probably the challenge at the moment. It's not a surprise to hear that New South Wales Cup team for Para is struggling, because we've got most of those guys playing a fair bit of first grade. But, the depth is not good. All right. On the back of some of those stats about the Dogs and them being on the rise and Will giving Dogs fans a bit of hope, well, he wasn't wrong, because they scored the most points they've scored in a fair while.
Yeah, Will, I should have listened to Will on my footy tips, mate, because I, on the back of their Penrith win, I thought the Titans had turned the corner a little bit, but their defence just was nowhere near acceptable. They just didn't seem like they defended together all year. They were disjointed. And credit to the Bulldogs. They've had a struggling attack, but they did very well. They scored the points. You know, the Titans, if you look across all the stats, they were in the game. You know, they completed 82%, far higher than the Bulldogs, and did everything right. Their play the ball speed was quicker. Their runs, they almost ran for only a couple of hundred metres less. Yeah. They did everything right. They just couldn't score points. And I think, you know, that's a byproduct of having those young spine players. You know, we spoke about Zane Harrison. He's learning as we go. Campbell and Kinney, there's no doubt they're great footballers, but they still haven't played a lot of first grade. And then Pascoe at nine. So you've just got to expect that they're just going to have some ups and down weeks. The good news was for the Titans that they're starting to show improvement around all the other areas. So they're not alone not being able to score points. You know, the Dragons and the Eels are two teams that are exactly the same. The Raiders as well. Canterbury for the first part of the season. So, you know, you just got to look at the upside for the Titans. So they did a lot of the other things really well. And when those four players continue to develop and continue to get more experience, that's when you'll start to see the points flow for the Titans.
Yeah, absolutely. You look at the Dogs, though. They have had a couple of things that have changed. They've got Max King and Leo Thompson are starting to make metres again. So they're dominating there. Their back five, again, just like... If you look at the numbers, Rinakama ran for 230 metres.
Yeah.
And the rest of them were over 100, well over 100. Connor Tracy had one of his better games for a long time. He was really off it about 4 weeks ago. And it's allowed Lockie Galvin to free up even more, and he's making huge money, 170 run meters. That's unbelievable. So yep. There's a lot of things trending in the right direction for the Dogs. Yeah, it's a pity we couldn't have Will on again. He's caught up with other stuff, but so far everything that he touches turns to gold, and he called that one. So make sure if you're listening that you get on board his tips for next week.
Yeah, definitely.
Roosters Bronx. The Bronx were brave. What do you think?
100%. Mate? Yeah, that's a great way to put it, mate. They really were. We spoke about the Roosters Origin players. I think there's six of them that they had to. They're playing three games in 11 days thereabouts, and you saw that a little bit with the Roosters. They weren't as sharp. They weren't as clinical as what they had been. And the Broncos just kept turning up, mate. They kept fighting their ass off. You know, when obviously they were up at half time, and even deep into the second half, they were into it up to their eyeballs. So, you know, again, it's not good enough. The Broncos only want wins. There's high expectations for that club. But certainly you can't knock the effort. Again, their completion rate was better and a lot of other stats. They actually outperformed the Roosters. But unfortunately for them, the Roosters were just a little bit too sharp and got those tries, mate.
Yeah, come down to moments, and that probably showed the depth of the Broncos really being tested, that the class players of the Roosters stood up and owned those moments. So yeah. That well and truly puts the nail in the Bronx coffin. You called it weeks back, but it's now getting into the mathematical possibility. So
You look at the, you know, we talk about the Broncos earlier and what's going to happen to them. Obviously, they're missed this year. What the team looks like next year without Reynolds, without Haas. So Haas, in the middle of an Origin campaign, Payne Haas has made 18 hit-ups for 205 metres, right, and made 44 tackles and didn't miss one.
Hmm.
So you talk about an elite athlete playing in the middle in the NRL against a Roosters pack that is very, very impressive pack of forwards. And he's done that 3 weeks back from an injury in the middle of an Origin campaign. So he is going to leave a monster hole. Mitch Barnett coming or not, he's going to leave a monster hole for the Broncos. And it's going to be bloody interesting times to see. The media will not give up on the Broncos as far as pounding on them. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out over the next month and then leading into next season, mate.
Absolutely. The ultimate professional. History has shown that often players, they get their contract and then they go off the boil. Well, he's not going to be there next year. It looks like they're playing for, you know, some spot between 17th and 9th, and yet he's churning out those numbers like ultimate professional. So good.
Yeah.
The game of the season, is that too big a stretch? I heard a few people call it this, the Dolphins-Warriors.
Yeah, I'm on, mate. We called it beforehand. Not that it took some sort of psychic to call it, but these two teams really put on a performance, mate. It was star-studded. Obviously, the Warriors were missing a couple of key front rowers with Ford and Fisher-Harris, and probably ultimately that would have got them over the line for mine. But you can't knock anything from both teams. They were super impressive. To lose Katoa early on in the contest was a big thing for the Dolphins. So it'll be really interesting to see how this plays out. There's still, you know, anywhere from sort of 5 to 8 weeks pending how the scans and how the operation goes on his wrist. But he'll be a monster. He'll be a monster out for the Finns. Obviously, there's some players in there that can fill in and play some halves. But he will be a big loss. So for them to continue scoring points the way they did and continuing to play that free-flowing football without him was an absolute credit to their systems, mate. But again, the Warriors, even in defeat, they were super impressive, mate.
They just
kept coming the whole game.
Yeah, and a few refereeing decisions that perhaps didn't go their way. As you mentioned, they're without a couple of players there, and they've performed strongly with that forward pack, even with those absences in the past. Super impressive, and they're not going to lose any fans over that. Those two teams will be in that top four prelim final, you would think, barring major injury crisis, because one hell of a game. And it's like, it feels like we're starting to get proper footy back.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you there, mate. That was exactly what that game was. That was, we wanted finals quality football, and that's exactly what we got. They turned up to play. You know, the six agains didn't hit, and penalties didn't hit as hard. I think there was only seven six agains and two penalties across the contest, so that wasn't as big a thing. You know, the Warriors will probably look back and think it's one that got away. You know, when Sam Healy scored that in the 74th minute, they thought that was game, as did everyone watching it. But Cobbo's just having one of those seasons that everything he touches turns to gold. So I wouldn't have walked away disappointed regardless of who won this contest, because I think they both put in a performance that deserved the victory. Mm-hmm. And then to your point, two fully fit sides. Obviously, as we said, Katoa's out and Tommy Gilbert has still got a few weeks to go, hopefully next week for the Dolphins. And the Warriors list is a large one and growing. But the two big ones are Fisher-Harris and Jackson Ford for them. If they get them back, there's a couple of outside backs with Cam Pereira and Dallin out. But if they're full strength, Roger won't be back this season, RTS. But those two teams are full strength. I think they're going to absolutely give it to each other come semi-final time, and they're going to take it to the Panthers. I think they're really growing, these two teams, and it's bloody exciting to watch them.
Oh, absolutely. And we talked about coaches before. Two coaches doing great work with not just the immediate first-grade squad, but with those guys coming through. The fact that the Warriors have been able to continue at that level with young forwards coming in, with the two halves, the two sort of main halves that at different times at the start of the year not there. Yeah, super impressive. Now, you mentioned finals type footy. That's what Cowboys' performance on Saturday night reminded me of. But they were relentless. It shows me two things. They Jason Tomalolo means a lot to all of them and to the organisation, but also says that they made the right decision re-signing Todd Payton, because they're clearly playing for him now too. He's been re-signed for two more years. Super impressive performance from the Cows.
Yeah, mate. They push that out every week. Then they're a top eight team, potentially banging on the top four. That was really sharp. You know, as we said at the beginning of the podcast, that first tackle knocked the ball out. You don't see Moses Leota take a backward step like that very often, if ever. For them to do that on the kickoff, everyone knew in the stadium, Penrith included, that this was game on. So for them to put in that performance, it was so good to see Taumalolo, you know, get honoured the way he did. But then for him to play the way they did for him was pretty special. So this was an interesting contest as far as the top eight goes as well, because the Cowboys still at ninth spot now on nine wins, but this was a big one for them. You know, not too many, as we've said, only three losses for Penrith throughout the season. This isn't 2 points that many clubs get, so this is a big one for them. Interesting one for the Panthers. I know they get Mitch Kenny back hopefully next week or this coming week, but, you know, they're 2-2 without him. That's been a big one for them. I think they've underestimated how much Mitch Kenny's provided for them. I know Lussick's done you know, solid, and on the back of it's got a contract out of it with Canterbury, but I think Mitch Kenny's a really important factor for them. And I think you'll see, you know, Origin will be finished, Mitch Kenny will come back, and I think Penrith will get on their bike again. But hats off to the Cowboys, a hard-earned win and well-deserved.
Yeah, absolutely. They were unbelievable. On Mitch Kenny, yeah, he's just a beast. Like, defensively, he just rips in. And the word is that communication and how well he rallies and organises the defence is an important thing, and that's what we've seen. They haven't been at that same standard that they started the year. But the Cowboys, super impressive. Like, that it was like finals football, and they were up and about. And as you said, if they can perform like that every week, then they're definitely knocking on the top four. And if you look at where they're up to, they've only had one bye, so they've actually had nine wins, which is the same as Manly and more than both South and Cronulla. So with two more byes to bank, they could be a serious threat for that top four if they can find some consistency around performances like that. But that was super impressive, and more than anything, really enjoyable game to watch. The Panthers threw plenty at them.
Oh yeah, the Penrith, look, Penrith weren't at their ultimate best. Don't get me wrong, but Penrith played some good football. They certainly didn't throw it away. The completion rate ultimately probably didn't help Penrith, their error rate. But at the end of the day, the Cowboys capitalised on it. They defended really well. They kept Penrith to 12, obviously, and defended really impressively. So hats off to the Cowboys. To your point, it's an absolute logjam on the ladder. 24 points for the Warriors coming second, and then the Cowboys are 20 coming ninth, and to your point, with only one bye. So after this week, there'll be six teams that have had all three byes, and every team will have had at least two byes. So after this week, you're going to see a bit more consistency with the ladder, but don't let the Cowboys fool you looking at ninth spot. They're higher on the ladder than that when you take into account byes. They turn going up to Townsville into a bit of a graveyard at the back end of this season and can win their games at home. They're looking like they're going to play semi-final football this year.
Absolutely. Now, it's not often I can say I thoroughly enjoyed a Manly win, but I really enjoyed this one. They absolutely bashed the Storm. Yeah. And I can't believe that they didn't pick Turbo in the end for the Blues, because that's as close as he's been to his best in a good few years, I reckon. He looked like he was fully trusting his body. He was causing havoc, not just with the ball, but the amount of times he drew attention and then passed to people in space, because he's such a threat. And we've talked about it before, Olakau'atu. He was on a mission, and he absolutely terrorised Cam Munster. Munster even talked about it in the post game that he'll have his hands full if he's in a Blues jersey. It was quite a quite an impressive performance from the Eags, and completing at 95%, but still throwing the ball around. If they can play like that, they're going to be hard to beat.
Yeah, mate, you've summed it up perfectly, mate. Only two errors across the 80 minutes of football is super impressive. Obviously, a game at Four Pines is big for them. You know, they get up, the crowd just goes berserk. It's a full house, and they played like it. You know, Olakau'atu, two tries in the first 10 minutes of the game. They knew they were up, and it was just lights out from the beginning. You know, to your point, mate, I made it this far without mentioning Stephen Crichton's selection for the Blues, because I'm just gobsmacked about it. But how Turbo wasn't put in the side when you've got that extra protection if something does happen with an injury, I'm just lost for words, mate. So he was great. If he stays fully fit for the rest of the year, and obviously it's a big if, but if he stays fully fit through the rest of the season, then again, you're looking at another team that's going to play semi-final football that after six rounds was just unconceivable. So it's really impressive. Obviously, the big news coming out of that game is Luke Brooks. He'll be out for the season with his knee injury. That'll give young Joey Walsh a lot of games in first grade. There's still another 10-odd games for him, 12-odd games for him to play. So that'll be really good for his development in the back end of the year. But if they can get around him, Jamal Fogarty's going to need to really step up. You know, that was the knock on him during last year's semi-final campaign for Canberra. He didn't step up when he was needed, when Strange was missing. So this will be a big thing for Jamal Fogarty. If he can step up, they stay fully fit. Obviously, Garrick will be back next week, and Takiyako is still undecided on when he'll be back. But they're not too bad injury-wise. The ones that are missing aren't out-and-out guns. So Turbo fully fit, Jamal Fogarty stand up. They're another side that could go into semi-final football with a bit of confidence, mate.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, Luke Brooks is an important out. But apart from one crossfield kick on his own 20 from Joey Walsh, I thought he was, again, quite impressive. He just looks like he's got so much time on the ball. We talked about Zane Harrison last week, but, Joey Walsh fits into that same category of a young fella that just looks like he's got so much confidence, maybe a little bit too much confidence with that crossfield kick.
Oh, you'd rather him have a little bit too much early than be worried about it. But, yeah, look, regardless of what happens this year, I can't see them winning the comp, but regardless of what happens this year, that'll be a huge learning curve for Joey Walsh these next 12 weeks. I'll be shocked from here if they don't play semi-final football, regardless of how tight the ladder is. They've got a fairly good run home, and I know we'll speak to that after Origin's finished. We can start talking about teams' runs home, but I've had a quick look at Manly, and it's not as hard as some of the other clubs. So fully fit, mate. Joey Walsh should get a lot out of these next 12 weeks to help his development, mate.
Absolutely. Now, at the risk of upsetting Raiders fans, because maybe they think they would have won it anyway, but one of the all-time howlers from the bunker, the knock-on that was then length of the field try for the Raiders.
Yeah.
Mate.
Yeah. Devastating would be the word that I would use for us long-suffering Dragons fans, mate. Yeah.
Just puzzling. Like,
yeah.
Like, how do you come up with that? Like, you could slow it down and try and mount a case that it goes flat, kinda. But for 120 years, that's just a knock on. Like, it's just staggering.
Not even close. As Cookie said in the press conference, not even Canberra thought it was a try. They all walked back. There was no one there ready to take the kick. So it was disappointing. Look, truth be told, Canberra were probably the better side, but if St George had won the game, you would have walked away going, yeah, fair enough. They were thereabouts. But at the end of the day, mate, you go into the games at the moment with the referees, they're not expecting St George to win. And it's just that, you know, we're going to call it unconscious bias. They just get the rub of the green, the opposition at the moment. So it's disappointing. The good news is, once again, that the Dragons team continue to turn up. Those young forwards, just churn out the meters again. Those two Couchman boys, Ben Cray, and whoever he's going to make captain needs, whoever he's going to make coach needs to lock every one of those forwards up straight away. You know, for the Couchmans to run for 178 and 115, Hamish Stewart has just continued to get better the more first grade he's played. And then even Pacifica Tonga, he doesn't get as many minutes for obvious reasons. He's a real big body as the others, but he gets some quality out of it as well. So for them, it's all good news, mate. We've just got to make sure that when these players come next year that they find a way to score points, because that's the part of the game that we're not quite getting right at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And we can't walk away without praising the Raiders. What I would say to that is it's a win, but it's not against a team that's going to be troubling any of the top eight sides. So it's probably one that they should have won. Not sure we should be getting too excited about either of these two teams for the rest of the year, really.
No, that's the way to put it, mate. At the end of the day, Canberra should have always beaten St George down there in the capital, and they did. So they got the 2 points, so good on them. But, yeah, at the end of the day, it wasn't a performance you'd walk away thinking, shit, the Canberra Raiders are going to do some damage this season. I think where they are sitting on the ladder now is about it. They're going to be in the bottom eight, obviously, and towards the bottom half of that bottom eight as well.
Yeah, I think you're right. Notice the Tigers fans talking about on the socials just how bad they were against a Newcastle team that didn't really perform in that first half. Are they being too harsh, or is that one that just got away for the Tigers?
To me, mate, this was a bludger of a game. You talk about a few of them. I just could not get excited watching this throughout the whole game. I know it was a little bit wet, but Sunday afternoon, I thought these two teams would really turn it on. You know, the Knights' completion rate, 68%, was just absolutely woeful. And I just couldn't get excited about it at all. You know, there was the slowest game, and Will had some stats for us that he couldn't bring today, as you mentioned, unfortunately. But it was the slowest game as far as play the ball speed goes throughout the round. As far as the penalties and the ruck infringements, there were 17. So it just couldn't get any flow to the game. And I just really thought it was, it was a miserable game. There were 60-odd missed tackles. There wasn't much to get excited. The one thing I will say with both teams is Newcastle keep finding a way to win ugly. Like, they're not playing well at the moment, but they've continued to win. You know, they're 3-1 the last 4 weeks. So, you know, that's the mark of a good side, or a side that can do some damage in the back end of the season when they're winning those ugly games that they shouldn't. And the Tigers, yeah, Dewey back was a huge plus for them. There's no question about that.
Yeah, but, yeah, as you said, it wasn't a great game to watch. There were moments there. The length of the field try for the Knights, some amazing work there from Dong Myung. The chase by Ponga to chase down Makassini when he was seemingly going to score out of the post. That was like he gave him a good 5-10 meter start. But there wasn't too much else to get excited about. It was a pretty tough watch, actually.
Yeah, mate, yeah. Look, those two teams, I think the Knights have put themselves in a position now to make the eight. They've already had 10 wins, so Ponga's fully fit. They make the eight. The Tigers just need to get everyone back on the park and back playing the way they did at the start of the season to hopefully get going. Only 7 wins and 8 losses. This next couple of weeks are going to be a big one. St George this coming week will be monstrous. Obviously, Taylor Mays, unfortunately, lost his battle with that shoulder. It's the third and final time he's done that shoulder. So with him and Kai Pierce-Paul out for the season, they'll desperately need Twal back this week, because if they go down to the Drags, it'll start to be red pen time for the Tigers, unfortunately.
Yeah, and quite possibly a bit of pressure coming on the coach as well. You mentioned Taylor May, massively disappointing for the Tigers. Terrell May, did you see his chase on the Bradman Best try?
Yeah.
Like, mate.
Yeah.
I don't know what data there is that says he's not quite up to Origin standard, but to me that was an Origin play. Like, to the amount of work he got through to that point, and to be within a whisker of actually shutting down that play, chasing two outside backs, mate, what a player.
Yeah. Well, you talk about Hass's stats that we just raved about. Taylor May's not far off. 20 runs for 107. Terrell May.
Yeah.
20 runs for 173 metres and 45 tackles, 2 misses. So, for an absolute giant of a human to be putting up those numbers, again, against a Knights pack that are no pushovers, he's a special athlete, mate. And to your point, I don't understand. There has to be something else going on that the public isn't made aware of off the park with May, because, yeah, for mine, he should be in the side.
Yep. Power rankings. What have we got?
Mate, Gags hasn't made any changes for last week. So after a couple of losses for Penrith and the Warriors, he's still held firm. So Penrith 1, Warriors 2, Finns 3. He's got the Roosters at 4 and Manly at 5. So almost how they sit on the NRL ladder at the moment is how Gagan sees them for the week. So, he's holding strong, mate, on what he thought last week.
If the Dolphins beat the Knights, particularly with a fair few Origin players out, they'll be threatening those top two positions. The Panthers will be depleted against the Bunnies. You think they might do it tough there? Yeah, be interesting to see what happens. Well, that's assuming the Dolphins win. So let's see what unfolds. But the pressure will be applied to the great man then, because, there'll be plenty for him to think about.
Yeah, it will, mate. Yeah, you're right. There's some interesting games this week, not only for Gagan's power rankings, but for the ladder. So there's obviously 40 of the best players won't be lacing up a boot, and there's some big games for top 8 and top 4. As you said, the Panthers and the Rabbitohs and the Roosters, the Knights and the Dolphins are two monster games that'll have huge impact. So can't wait to unpack those games on Wednesday night, mate.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking forward to my Sunday. It'll be a fantastic pub lunch down there at Para before strolling across to the game, and then the day
hoping
might
for the best.
Yeah, they're hoping for the best. The day might take a turn after that, based on current form lines.
Yeah, let's see what happens for you, buddy.
Yeah, exactly. yeah, we're still putting out feelers for fans. I may have a Warriors fan for us that I run into on Saturday night at the pub, who's keen. So we could be up for one there. But make sure you are putting your hand up if you want to come on. As always, make sure you subscribe, share with a mate, and we want to keep being that alternative to the very biased and repetitive mainstream media.